Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 65, Trials of the Four Towers. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Yeah, Power Pros.
And we're back, finally. We had to take last week off due to some unfortunate circumstances, but we are back once again this week to talk more about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. And one of the big things that happened recently is that we just passed the 20th anniversary of the release of the Nintendo 64 in North America.
And now's when I say, 20 years? Has it been that long?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem weird to me when I say, oh, the NES is more than 30 years old, or the Super NES is 25 years old. But to say it's been 20 years since the release of the Nintendo 64 just kind of weirds me out.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while.
That it has. So we're going to get to that later on. That's going to be our big topic, the top 10 releases on the Nintendo 64. But before we get to that, we've got a lot of stuff to discuss. We've got some game impressions. We've got some news. Mm-hmm. So let's kick it off with that. Specifically, let's start with the latest game in the Sonic the Hedgehog series, Sonic Boom Fire and Ice. And for once, Scott, both of us have actually been playing this game simultaneously.
That is right. I did my homework. I thought, oh, I'm going to probably enjoy this. I love Sonic, so.
Yep, me too.
I figured, what the heck.
And what do you think so far?
What do I think? That is a loaded question.
is it?
So
that doesn't sound good.
I could describe my GameStop experience, which was me going to the counter and quietly asking if they had this game. Because it is kind of for children. I'm going to say it's for children. It's also, I think, made for...
Oh, it's not for children. I tried to buy it at Target, and I got a warning saying it was only for people 17 and older. So I don't know what happens later in this game, but...
Yeah, on Target, it didn't have a rating yet for some reason. So I guess they default to games not having a rating to be like...
Oh, no. I think it's all full of swearing and nudity later on. I think that's what happens.
It's definitely got some questionable content.
Oh, does it?
They make Sonic out to be such a doofus.
Really? You think so?
Yeah. Yeah, why is Tails the smart one? I don't get it. Anyway.
Well, Tails has always been the smart one.
Well.
I do have issues with the other characters, but not necessarily Sonic.
Okay.
But that aside, I've really been enjoying the game so far. I actually like it.
I have too. I've enjoyed it. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. I do have a few gripes, but for the most part, I'm enjoying it. I think the most striking thing for me, and this is somebody, you know, we're playing games that are made in the last, you know, 5-10 years, but I'm also playing old games.
Mm-hmm.
But man, the UI in this game is bizarre. It's like they gave one developer the entire job of, okay, you figure out how the player's going to interact with this game. The UI is just bananas. It feels like Donkey Kong Country UI graphics. Like it's weird, just a mishmash. The typeface is terrible. The weird menu systems are bizarre and, you know, look like they're from the 90s. But the gameplay is a lot of fun. I'd say it feels a lot to me like Donkey Kong Country. Not just the UI, but the gameplay and the I don't know. What do you think?
I think there are a few similarities, especially with Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, because that's kind of the thing that's going on in this game. Is the weather's going haywire, and so you're supposed to be on this tropical island, but everything is all icy. And of course, the game is titled Fire and Ice, so that plays a big role. And you know, you're out in some desert area, and there's big old ice chunks there, or there's water, and you're freezing it. Mm-hmm. So I certainly felt that kind of similarity. But other than that, I thought that, I mean, it didn't really feel like Donkey Kong Country so much as it felt like Sonic, like kind of like classic Sonic. We had some pretty bad experiences from what I heard with the previous Sonic Boom games, but I think the important takeaway for me is that from what I've played so far, this game is back on the right track for Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
I thought it had a pretty good balance of speed, lots of speed, lots of running. And, you know, maybe not as much platformy stuff as I would kind of like in my Sonic games, but it certainly did make you stop and think. And you do have to decide, oh, am I going to use a special ability here? Am I going to use your grapple beam that you have? Or am I going to mix it up with some homing attacks? Mm-hmm. There's certainly lots of stuff where you're just sort of, you know, going through a speed booster and you're running up a wall and through a corkscrew and through a loop and you're not really doing anything for a few seconds.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people kind of like Sonic that way.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was like, oh, this is, you know, I can't control Sonic at this point. He's going too fast. And it happens at least once a level.
It happens several times per level.
But I'm okay with it. It's fun. It's fun.
I mean, it's just kind of spectacle.
Yeah, the power-ups for the different characters are fun, I thought. There's a boomerang. There's Amy's got a hammer. This character called Styx has boomerang.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's a new character from the Sonic Boom universe.
Tails has like a floating mechanic and a laser beam.
Yes.
Tails' laser beam, you can aim it, and it kind of bounces off reflective surfaces. So there's some puzzle solving.
And Knuckles can go underground.
I enjoy it. I'm enjoying it. My issue with the games is the UI is kind of stale, and the
I wasn't really paying attention to the UI, so that didn't really bother me.
All right.
I mean, when it comes to Sonic games, it's had a lot more issues with it going on in the last several years than UI. So I'm just sort of paying attention to it. You know, does it play good? And so far, it does play pretty good.
It does.
If you like Sonic, so far I'm kind of thinking yes, this is a recommendation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't promise it doesn't, you know, go totally down the tubes after the first few worlds, but you know, I am enjoying it.
I thought the look of the levels is a little blah, you know, and it gets kind of old after, I don't know, 10 levels where they're the exact same, for better lack of a better word, tile set, and then you go to
same environments. You mean
the same environment, and so you're going from an ice world to a sand world, and in the sand world, it's the ice world, but with a different, you know, a different skin on the, I don't know. I guess I'm cranky, but it's...
You are cranky.
I'm not...
I think the game is kind of better than
you make it out to be. It's not like Donkey Kong Country where, you know, when I play like Donkey Kong Country...
Why do you keep saying Donkey Kong Country, man?
Because this game is so Donkey Kong Country, they should just call it Sonic Kong Country.
I don't know. I don't feel that connection as much as you do, I suppose.
All right. I wish there were a demo of this so people could try it out without forking over $40. I $30 like this game, but I don't $40 like it. But I recommend it for if you're a Sonic fan.
Now, one of the things that I liked about this game is that it has a whole lot of variety going on. And, you know, in the past, it's sort of been an issue, you know. You know, people want to play as Sonic. They don't really necessarily want to play as the other characters. So if you're forced to play as the other characters, it's kind of tacked on. But in this one, you're able to switch on the fly. So when you want to use Styx for her boomerang or Knuckles for going underground and all the other stuff you mentioned, you just, you know, touch the touch screen. You can change characters right away.
Yep.
You can use their ability and they can go back to using Sonic if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Although you don't have to because, you know, Sonic just goes fast and most of the other characters can also go fairly fast as well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like that aspect? And do you have a favorite character?
I did. Favorite character, I gotta say Sonic because he's got the that dash move. Tails doesn't have that up and side dash, which I found very handy for platforming. They all have a double jump, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the character I least liked was Amy and her very slow to use hammer. Like you press the hammer button, you hit the thing, you wait like 3 seconds, the thing lowers, you get on it, you wait 3 seconds.
Well, the pillar goes slow, but she's, you know, fairly responsive.
Yeah, but every time I pull her out, I end up hating her because of the slowness of the thing that she affects. So I think that could have been done better.
I wish the pillars were faster, yeah.
But overall, I really enjoyed switching the characters. They did have it, so you could press the D-pad left and right to switch characters, and I wished it were responsive, but it's not. You press the D-pad.
Yeah, so I don't use that.
Yeah, it's super annoying. You press the D-pad, and it actually brings up a menu of characters, and then you can switch between the characters. Mm-hmm. If I press the D-pad, just switch the characters. I don't need to see a menu. Just let me cycle through them.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Yep. So, not a fan of that.
Yeah, I just use the touchscreen to do that. It's a lot more effective.
Yeah, the touchscreen is definitely... Now,
have you unlocked Knuckles yet?
No, I don't have Knuckles yet, but I the last character I unlocked was Styx, the one with the boomerang.
Okay, well, you're going to get Knuckles really soon. And Knuckles is by far my least favorite character.
What's his power-up?
I mean, digging underground, I guess that's okay.
Okay.
But, you know, this is the first time I've really experienced a lot of the Sonic Boom universe, And man, he is a terrible character in Sonic Boom. He is like brick stupid.
Yeah,
And if you see his character design, he looks awful too. He's the worst redesigned character. He's as stupid as a stone.
Well, he's the big jock.
And also, the texture work on his character is garbage. I don't understand why. All the other characters look fine, but for some reason he has these stupid bandages all over him, and they're super low res. So all the other characters look okay, but he just looks stupid from head to toe. So please look forward to getting Knuckles on your team.
I will avoid Knuckles.
And he doesn't have his climbing ability. I mean, that was like his main thing.
Yeah.
That was his main ability back in the Sonic and Knuckles days, and he can't even do that now, so ugh. This version of Knuckles makes Big the Cat seem cool. So.
Yeah, one more thing I want to say. I think Styx's boomerang ability would have been a lot less cool had it not been for later on you find out, oh, I can control the boomerang with the D-pad, with the thumbstick.
Yeah.
Which is super cool. What a neat little ability. I just really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's actually my favorite character because of that.
Mm. Yeah, you can explore areas you wouldn't otherwise be able to reach because you basically leave your character behind and control the boomerang.
Yep, totally. So back to what I was saying about all the variety in this game, another thing that is kind of interesting is that in addition to the traditional side-scrolling 2D stages, it also has a bunch of other kinds of stage. It's got these 2D race stages where you race against Dr. Eggman, a.k.a. Dr. Robotnik. Mm-hmm. It's got these 3D race stages. They're kind of like the ones, kind of like the bonus stages in Sonic 2. It's got these submarine stages, and it's got these hovercraft stages. Did you enjoy any of those, or are there any that you think, no, just totally, those shouldn't even be in there, they should skip those?
The hovercraft stage felt tacked on to me. It just felt a little too much like a kiddie game. It felt like a GBA mini game to me, but
no, it did certainly feel like a mini game.
Yeah. The racing was really fun, and it felt like those Rayman levels where you just have to go fast, you know.
Yeah, it reminded me of I think Sonic Rivals is the game that had stuff like that, or the race against, you know, Metal Sonic, mm-hmm. back from Sonic CD. So I like that stuff, and the 3D stuff was pretty cool. I guess it's nice that all that stuff is kind of optional. It's just, oh, you can do these optional levels and get some bonus things if you want to, but they're sort of off the beaten path, so for the most part you can skip those. Not the racing stuff, not the 2D racing stuff, mm-hmm. because that's apparently integral to the story, which is terrible, by the way.
It's some sort of environmental, silly weather station thing.
Well, no, I mean, when Robotnik catches you, he goes, oh, this is my master plan to make you, to beat you in these races, and then you'll retire and we'll never see you again. You saw that part, right?
I did. The story, I mean, thankfully, you can skip it, but it comes with a set of DVD. It comes with a DVD, so you watch a bunch of episodes of this animated series they created with these characters. It's funny. Some of the animation is pre-rendered, and some of it's in using the game engine. And I'm surprised that none of it's in 3D. The cutscenes, which is kind of
Yeah, I think it's kind of unfortunate.
It's a small little thing, but I really would like to see it in 3D. I don't see why they couldn't have made it in 3D, but for some reason they didn't. So the cutscenes are cute, and they're obviously not for me. They're for children.
They're not as dumb as they have been in some Sonic games, though.
I'm not a huge fan of Sonic's voice or making him a big dummy, but I'm enjoying it.
I don't like this voice either, but yeah, I mean, bottom line for me, though, is I think that this Sonic game, you know, gets him back on track after the last two reportedly terrible Sonic Boom games. And, you know, I think it has, you know, lots of variety in there, so you're not going to get bored. The difficulty does seem to be a little bit on the easy side, since you seem to have infinite lives, and you always respawn at your last checkpoint.
Yep. And there's no difficulty setting, so you're kind of
not.
You know, you can make it hard for your... I mean, there are challenging situations, like you have to collect all the rings in a row to get
if you look at all the collectibles, that's kind of the hard part.
Getting all the collectibles is challenging. It's very much like Donkey Kong Country in that way.
Again with the Donkey Kong Country. This is,
I tell you what, if there's anybody out there who agrees with me, please let me know on Twitter at @PlasticBugs. I want to know that I'm not the only one who thinks this game is pretty much Donkey Kong Country, but with Sonic instead of Donkey Kong.
I think it's Sonic, but with Sonic.
All right.
With a little bit of Donkey Kong Country in there. Like I said, I understand the whole Tropical Freeze vibe, but for the most part, I think it just feels like Sonic, and I'd say that's a good thing.
Okay.
Bottom line, I like it, and if you're a Sonic fan, I recommend it.
Me too.
All right, well, on to another new release on the Nintendo 3DS. River City Tokyo Rumble came out.
Yeah, I tried to pick this one up, and they weren't having it over at GameStop. So you pretty much have to buy this online.
Yeah, the physical version of this is really, really limited. They didn't make a whole lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, I ended up just getting the digital version, not the physical release, unfortunately.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, which is unusual for me. But in this case, I was able to get a code, so I was able to download it. And so I've been playing it, and I have been enjoying it. It is a lot like the original River City Ransom on the NES.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I would say so. If you're a fan of that game, I think you'll enjoy this one. The action feels very, very similar. It's got, you know, the same cool music that the original one did. And, you know, lots of stores to buy new moves and power-ups and things of that nature. And you do have lots of moves, lots of weapons, lots of bad guys saying comments as you knock them out and take their money or take items and things like that.
Do they say barf when they get hit?
You know, so far, I haven't seen any enemies say barf, but there is an homage to that. There is a good guy, NPC, who gets beaten up at the beginning as part of the story, and he says barf. But so far, that's the only barf I've noticed.
I'm guessing that was
kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, I'm guessing they just wanted to give you a little bit of fan service there.
I think so. And, you know, technically, this is a sequel to Old River City Ransom, but almost feels like a remake because, you know, the graphics are so similar, the backgrounds are so similar, and the gameplay is so similar. And the weird thing is that the backgrounds are actually polygonal now, but they're so simple, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, this looks kind of just like an NES game. I mean, the sprite characters have been updated as well, but still, they're pretty simple. So if you aren't, like, looking at the NES game, you could almost be fooling yourself into thinking, oh, this is just like the original. It's not. It's updated. There's a lot more story and things like that as well.
Yeah, was this a $30 downloadable game? Was it $30 or was it $40?
I believe it's $30.
And how much, do you know how much the collector's edition was?
If you were able to get in an early order, then you could get like a free keychain that Natsume was offering.
Oh, that's what I saw.
Other than that, there was no collector's edition. Yeah, I think those are pretty much sold out now. If you wanted to get one of those, it would probably cost you an arm and a leg. But for me, it's not anything that's so amazing that I have to get the keychain.
Well, I don't even know if I can find it without the keychain, to be honest.
Well, I think there's a good chance that Natsume will be making more if you still can't get it. It was still available on Amazon until recently, but is it all gone now?
Yeah, just resellers now.
Well, I guess that's why we have the eShop. But, I mean, I'm glad to know it's doing well. That's, you know, pretty cool that a game that is kind of old school and obscure like this.
Yeah, I just hope this isn't one of those situations where they make a limited number, they don't make any more, and then it becomes this, like, $100 3DS game.
It could, but again, you can always just get the downloadable version, so it's not going to be, you know, impossible to obtain or anything like that. One thing I will say, compared to the original, is that this game is a lot more structured. You know, in the original, you could just sort of go anywhere you want. You had free reign to explore this whole world. In this one, the game's sort of broken up into chapters, so you can only go to a very limited number of areas at first, and then you beat a boss or whatever, and then it's like, okay, another area unlocks, and you can go there. So because of that, you aren't able to play it at your own pace quite as much, and therefore it ends up feeling kind of a little bit more repetitive. I mean, that kind of happens anyway when you're talking about an old-school beat-em-up. You know, they're just sort of repetitive by nature. But just as sort of a warning, it's not quite as freeform and open as the original if you're expecting that.
Is it as punishingly difficult as the NES game?
So far, it hasn't been. You actually level up just from beating up enemies. Oh. So aside from being able to purchase new moves and new gear and buy like food items that boost your stats, just by beating enemies up, you level up and you grow stronger. So because of that, it's got this really heavy emphasis on these RPG elements. I think that makes it very fun, and it also makes it easier because you don't have to hunt down, you know, the special shops specifically to get stronger. You'll always be getting stronger just by beating the crap out of enemies. So it's not too tough so far.
Mm-hmm.
One other word of warning, though, there is no two-player co-op mode in story mode.
Hmm.
It is single-player only. You do have a CPU-controlled partner, and there are several different partner characters who can join up with you and go on your quest. But when it comes to you know, having another human player there, that only is available in the game's versus modes. There's a multiplayer battle mode and a dodgeball mode for up to four players, mm-hmm. but, you know, not in the story, which is kind of unfortunate because that's one of the coolest things about the original.
Yeah. So that dodgeball mode, is that super, basically Super Dodgeball, the classic game?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah. It's almost like two games in one. Mm-hmm. So on a technical level, I would say, you know, the gameplay, you know, doesn't compare to, you know, some of the more traditional classic, you know, beat 'em ups like Final Fight or Streets of Rage, but it's very comparable to the original River City Ransom. You know, the gameplay very similar, lots of moves, lots of cool stuff. All the RPG elements make for a really fun beat 'em up. And if you like the original, again, I, you know, very similar to what we were saying about Sonic, I think you're going to like this one.
What if I never played the original River City Ransom? Would you recommend this?
That's kind of a tough one. I mean, it's so mired in its old school roots.
Yeah.
If you're coming to this new, I think you're going to wonder why, you know, these graphics look, you know, just barely yeah. above 8-bit level. Mm-hmm. So it might be kind of a hard sell. You know, maybe if you're a real big beat 'em up fan, or for some reason you've really been craving an RPG that's also a beat 'em up.
Yeah.
But I think it really is to appeal to either the old school fan, or just, you know, a young gamer maybe who's never, you know, experienced something like this before. Mm-hmm. But I think it's probably going to serve classic fans the best.
All right. So it's for us gray hairs.
Speak for yourself, mister. All right. Now on to yet another new release. Man, you can really tell that it is getting close to the holidays, that we're into October now and we're having all these releases, you know, coming out rapid fire.
Yep.
Not so many from Nintendo, but, you know, third parties are all coming out there and making their stuff. So this other one that just came out this week is Azure Striker Gunvolt Striker Pack. You're fairly familiar with Azure Striker Gunvolt, right?
I am, fairly. I haven't really, really played Azure Striker Gunvolt, the first one.
Well, it came out like two...
Yeah, was it a couple years ago?
Yeah, I think it was about 2 years ago that it came out in the 3DS mm-hmm. eShop.
I played Mighty Gunvolt, which was like the free, not quite a demo. It was more like a way to help promote Azure Striker Gunvolt. And it was this 8-bit
version. Well, yeah, it was sort
version.
Of a mix between Mighty Number 9
yeah.
and Azure Striker Gunvolt. And it was, you know, 8-bit styled. Well, that one isn't included. Mm-hmm. Here, this is just Azure Striker Gunvolt and Azure Striker Gunvolt 2. And if you didn't play the game when it originally came out, if you didn't play the first one when it came out, then you're kind of missing out, because it's a really well-made game. And if you're a Mega Man fan, I would highly recommend it. If you're a Mega Man fan and you were let down by 90 number 9 especially, I recommend it, because this does everything right so far that Mighty No. 9 did wrong. It feels a lot like Mega Man X, and especially like Mega Man Zero, which I guess shouldn't be too much of a surprise, because it's by Intercreates, which is the same developer that did Mega Man Zero. It's also the same developer that did Mighty No. 9, and so I can't understand why that game was such a disappointment when they made such great games like this and like Mega Man Zero, and they also made Mega Man 9 and 10, mm-hmm. so I don't know what the heck happened with that still. But, you know, this is a really excellent package. Like I said, you know, it came out a couple of years ago. I got it then, I played a couple levels, and I really enjoyed it, but for some reason I got distracted and never went back to it. So now I've got it in physical form. This is a physical release with two games in one. You can also get Azure Striker Gunvolt 2 in the eShop. It came out, I think, a week or so mm-hmm. ago. But yeah, that was a physical release, and it's published by Yacht Club Games, the guys that did Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
So that's a, you know, pretty cool team up, if I may say so.
Yeah, I think that's really great. And that could mean updates ahead for this game. Who knows?
Maybe. Probably not. It's already got a lot of cool stuff that's in there. But, you know, the shooting, the dashing, the wall jumping, the acquiring weapons, all of it feels a lot like Mega Man. Or Mega Man Zero, I should say. And then, you know, the main sort of unique hook, the thing that's interesting about it, is that you sort of shoot enemies to tag them, and then you, like, unleash this lightning ability that zaps them, and it also serves as a force field. Mm-hmm. And so it's not, you know, it's got its own unique hooks, but still feels very much rooted in this Mega Man past. So it is quite a good game from what I've played. Hopefully it doesn't get super difficult or go down the tubes in later levels. I've still only played a few levels in each, but at least I played further than I played in the original release from a couple years ago. Gunvolt 2 does add a new character named Copen. I guess he was a rival in the first Azure Striker Gunvolt, and he plays differently, and he has different abilities, and he's a little bit harder to understand. I understand Gunvolt's abilities pretty well, but I haven't quite figured out Copen yet. But still, looking forward to playing more. I should also give out a warning that, as far as the story goes, Azure Striker Gunvolt 2 has some massive spoilers right at the beginning, so if you don't want to know what happens to the characters in Gunvolt 1, you should play that to completion first. Just be warned.
So is this a 3DS only?
Well, the 2-pack, the Striker pack, yes, it is 3DS only, and Gunvolt 2 is 3DS only, but the original one is also available on Steam. It came out more than a year ago, so you could play it that way. But as far as Nintendo systems go, yeah, it's 3DS only. I should also mention that, you know, while I haven't unlocked this feature yet, you know, because it's published by Yacht Club Games, there's actually a partnership in there. You can use the Shovel Knight amiibo in Gunvolt 2 and have a special battle against Shovel Knight.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
I like that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That sounds pretty darn cool in my book. So there you have it. 3 new releases, all of them pretty darn good, and all of them on 3DS. So if you're a Nintendo 3DS owner who's into third-party stuff, you have some good choices right now. So why don't we change gears a little bit and talk about some news. And this week in the news, we are digging up more dirt on Shovel Knight. This so-called protector of justice has been seen gallivanting about with many other game heroes. So yeah, speaking of Shovel Knight and Yacht Club Games, did you hear the news about Yooka-Laylee?
No, please tell.
Well, it turns out that Shovel Knight is going to be appearing in that game.
This is ridiculous. Shovel Knight's getting around. He's like Mario.
Yeah, he does.
He's making a lot of house calls.
He does it more than Mario. He's showing up in all kinds of things.
Yeah, they're really turning him into a mascot.
You know, I know a lot of people have kind of been wanting Yacht Club to do maybe a 3D platformer follow-up to Shovel Knight. Personally, I don't think it's necessarily a great fit. So maybe by putting Shovel Knight into what I hope is going to be a top-notch 3D platformer, hopefully that will satiate people's appetites. But that seems like a pretty cool crossover. Plus, we found out that Yooka-Laylee is going to be getting a physical release when it comes out next year. So
that's great news.
That's all cool news about that game. Speaking of things we're looking forward to, though, you're looking forward to the NES Classic, right?
Very much so. I hope I get one. I hope I get one on pre-order. You better tell me. You better tell all of us, Chris Hoffman. Chris Hoffman knows before everyone when this stuff is going to hit. For available for pre-order.
I'm not going to know till anyone else does.
Yeah, but you...
I'll know when everybody else does.
Surprisingly, you get in on pre-orders way more than most people I know. I feel like you see a bat signal the rest of us don't see when stuff like this goes up for pre-order.
Well, I hope so. I will let people know as soon as I can.
All right.
But where I was going with that is that they've announced that there is going to be a Famicom version as well coming out in Japan.
That's great, which we kind of expected, right?
Yes, we did. But now it's official. And it's going to be coming out right around the same time. It hits on November 10th, and it's going to be 5,980 yen, so basically the same price as the NES Classic. But the interesting thing about it is that it has different games.
Indeed it does. Obviously there are some in common.
Yeah, most of them are in common. I think it's got 22 shared games.
The important ones, mostly, but some glaring omissions and some... you know, balloon fighty type inclusions.
Yeah, so the Japanese version, the Famicom version, adds Ye R Kung Fu, which is a Konami 1-on-1 fighting game, a very archaic fighting game, which I really can't stand that game, to be honest.
I think it's terrible. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's a bad game. It's a bad game. And this is coming from a kid. This is coming from a kid who owned Urban Champion and won't poop talk it as much as he will Ye R Kung Fu. So
I don't like either of them. I think they can both go fall in a manhole as far as I'm concerned. But there's also a platformer called Atlantis No Nazo that didn't come out over here. I'm not very familiar with it since it was Japan only. Solomon's Key.
I'm not a fan of Solomon's Key personally, but
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of it either, but I certainly remember it on the NES. There's a game called Tsupari Sumo, which is obviously a sumo game, and you know, no surprise that that didn't see North American release. NES Open Golf. You know, I kind of didn't even realize that that was omitted from the NES.
I thought we did get that. Version. That's weird. I for some reason in my head, I thought we did get that golf game. But
yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing. But no, that one's not in there.
Because that was a very late in the NES's life cycle golf game, I believe. That was one of the last few games, first party, right? I think.
Then, we were talking about River City Ransom earlier, and River City Ransom is included with the Famicom, as is one of its spinoffs, Downtown Street Challenge, which was a predecessor to the game that was released in the U.S., known as Crashin' the Boys Street Challenge. And then, last but certainly not least, Final Fantasy III is being included in the Japanese Famicom Mini. But that means they had to take out 8 games as well.
Yeah.
So they are losing Donkey Kong Jr., Kid Icarus, Punch-Out!, Star Tropics, Castlevania II, Bubble Bobble, Tecmo Bowl, and Final Fantasy I. So we get Final Fantasy I, and they get Final Fantasy III.
Yeah.
So I would say Nintendo has done a great job appealing to their markets, because most of these that they added in, I don't care about, and all the ones that they dropped are like, hey, I want all these.
Yeah, I don't know. Kid Icarus feels so important to me. I can't imagine not having it. Maybe it wasn't as popular in Japan, but man.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Punch-Out. Honestly.
Yeah, Punch-Out's awesome. I mean, we know that in Japan that didn't really make a big splash.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand that. But, you know, if that was left out of the U.S. version, I'd be, you know, yelling and screaming from a mountain somewhere.
And Castlevania 2, I could take or leave, but.
Oh, I love Castlevania 2. I'm so happy we're getting that one.
Punch-Out. I'd be sad if I didn't have Punch-Out.
I mean, out of all of these, I would like River City Ransom that we're getting in the Famicom Mini. That would have been really cool. You know, if we could have, you know, dumped Bubble Bobble or something and got River City Ransom instead, I would be totally down with that. But other than that, I don't think there's really, you know, many changes I would have made here.
No, I don't think so either.
Like I said, I think they're doing a really good job.
Yeah. Unless you're in Japan and you really wanted those games and you'd be annoyed because you got Yi-R Kung Fu. NES Open Tournament Golf was released late in 1991. When was
91,
yeah,
okay.
That was pretty late in the
so around the time the Super Nintendo hit. Yeah. So yeah, as we were transitioning generations. So okay. But yeah, I mean that game's available on Virtual Console and everything, so you can certainly play it that way.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I do kind of worry about is, you know, looking at this thing, the controllers just seem so tiny on the Famicom Mini, don't you think?
Yes, but. So the way the Famicom was sold originally was wired controllers, they didn't have plugs that you could, you know, put them, you know, plug them into the console. They were wired directly into
permanent cable that was attached to the Famicom.
And then there were these two little holders on the sides that you would dock the controllers in. Now,
yeah, exactly.
I could be going on a limb here, but I think those are just for show. I don't think those are the actual controllers for the thing, because otherwise they would be chiclet-sized controllers.
I don't think they would be usable.
I think they would be unusable if those are the controllers.
Yeah, I don't know how you play it if they're wired to that thing, but it certainly looks like they are, and it certainly looks like they're super small, judging from the video that's available on Nintendo's Japanese website.
I hope not. Because it looks terrible. Because I am going to pick this up. But if it's unplayable and has tiny controllers, it's going to be tragic. So I'm assuming that they have worked out a solution wherein you don't have to play with a controller that's, I don't know, it looked like it would be like 2.5 inches.
Yeah.
We'll see. Nintendo's done dumber things. So I wouldn't put it past them. But I can't imagine 2.5 inch long controller. For the man babies out there, like me.
Yeah, it's for people with man baby hands, I guess.
Yeah, you'd have to be.
Well, now we're going to move along to our favorite news topic, Amiibo.
Amiibo!
I can't believe we're still talking about Amiibo.
Oh, we're still talking about Amiibo, my friend.
Who out there is still collecting Amiibo? It feels like the Beanie Baby fad on this thing is over, but.
Well, certainly it's not as big a craze as it used to be. But, you know, as we've talked about many, many times, some of these things are still really, really hard to get. And that's what this is all about, is that some of these more obscure, hard-to-find, very limited release amiibo are being reprinted, and they're actually going to be available once again. So, you know, I've talked many times about how impossible it was to get Lucina from the Smash Brothers series, mm-hmm. but finally, there's going to be more Lucina. There's going to be more Pit. There's going to be more Ness from Earthbound, also from the Smash series, as well as Samus and Sonic and Gold Mario. The limited edition Gold Mario from the Mario Party series is also getting a reprint. So all those, you know, are pretty hard to get, expensive on the secondary market, but they're all coming back. They're being sold, I guess, exclusively through Best Buy. The last time I checked, they're all still available for order online, and they're supposed to be out pretty soon on October 14th. So if you are one of the unlucky people who was not able to get those, you finally are going to have a second chance. You know, poor Robin from Fire Emblem, still not available.
That's funny.
But, you know, we're finally cutting down. I think it's just going to be like, you know, Palutena and Robin and Dark Pit, I think, are going to be the only ones that haven't really had much of a shot out at retail. So this is a nice step forward, because I've still, to this day, never seen a Pit or a Lucina in a store. So I'm glad this is happening. Are you going to pick any of these up?
No. No. No, I'm not.
Do you have all these already?
No.
Do you have any of them already?
I have one. I have one amiibo. I have Mega Man.
Oh.
And he's in the box. So I have yet to actually see an amiibo, like, function as an amiibo where you put it on the NFC, the NFC reader, and it would put the data in your machine. So, yeah, I haven't never even seen an amiibo in action. I see them collecting dust on people's shelves, so.
Well, maybe you should get Sonic, and then you can have third-party blue guys.
Yeah, I'd like to get, honestly,
get Shovel Knight as well.
If I had a short list, it's Shovel Knight, Sonic, Mario, and Mega Man. That's all I care about. Maybe Little Mac. Now you know what to get me for Christmas.
I guess so. Well, speaking of toys to life, the update for LEGO Dimensions also came out. All those new add-ons. All those new sets and character packs and level packs and all that good stuff. Are you into the LEGO stuff at all? Are you getting any of these?
No, they're too expensive for me. Do you buy these? Because if I were playing the game, maybe, but I'm not just going to collect them because I appreciate that they're made of LEGO. How do you feel about it?
Well, I'm not really into them either. And yeah, I'm not a very big fan of any of the LEGO video games. I could go on a rant about that for a long, long time, but I'll save that for a future podcast. But, you know, this is sort of a different case because this included LEGO Mr. T, LEGO A-Team.
Yeah. And I know you're a huge fan.
Yes, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. So I got this as soon as I could. And I was looking forward to, you know, then actually buying the LEGO Dimensions game and firing it up and scanning Mr. T in. It's like, okay, I'm going to go on an exciting LEGO adventure with Mr. T. But then I heard the horrible bad news. According to my former Nintendo Power colleague, Phil Theobald, who teams up every week with another former NP colleague, Justin Chang, on a podcast called Points of Articulation, where they talk about Legos and Transformers every week, Phil said it does not have the actual voice of Mr. T in the game. When I was at E3, I talked to the LEGO guys. I said, are you going to have Mr. T's voice?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you know, maybe we're still looking into that sort of thing. But no, it does not have Mr. T's actual voice. So now, you know, I'm just kind of like, well, I'm not going to get the game yet. I'm not so excited about playing it without the actual Mr. T voice.
Did they do a fake Mr. T?
They have a Mr. T impersonator,
oh,
yes.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Well, it's apparently actually a good voice actor. I think it was the guy who was like the lead character on the Walking Dead game, I think. So it's probably quality, but still, you can't have B.A. Baracus without having Mr. T, because, you know, try to spin any way you want. They are basically one and the same character. So it's a great little collectible. I love having a little Lego Mr. T, but I'm so disappointed about that.
Is it the whole A-Team plus the van?
No, nope. It's just Mr. T and the van, and a Lego van.
And
that's another thing. The instructions for building the van are apparently in the game. So I open this thing up, and it's like, okay, well, refer to the in-game instructions to build the van. So I haven't been able to build the van yet because I don't have the game.
That's pathetic. This is all to save money on printing manuals.
No, I think it's to trick you into buying the game. So people aren't just buying these as Lego collectibles, because I think a lot of people might.
Well, I bet online you can find. I bet you can find those instructions.
Yeah, I'll look around. But you know, there's so many cool things. You know, like so many different properties. You know, Back to the Future, Adventure Time, Ghostbusters, Harry Potter, and I think
Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think some people might just buy these because they're like, oh, well, this is a cool collectible.
For sure.
But it's like, oh, well, hey, you have to buy the game if you want the instructions. So I think that is why they're doing it. So I'll either figure out how to build the A-Team van myself, or I'll have to look up instructions online. I have to say, doing it myself would be very A-Team like, since that's what they would do every episode. They get locked in a garage somewhere and they'd be forced to build something from scratch. So I will see what I can do. But yeah, that is my takeaway on the A-Team update for LEGO Dimensions. speaking of cool video game collectibles, though, there is an update about some upcoming Zelda Figmas.
Yeah, I saw those. Cool.
Yeah, so we had talked about the Link and the Zelda Figma from Twilight Princess before, but now there are color images, and now pre-orders are up.
Yeah, they look really nice. I follow somebody on Twitter who works for the Good Smile Company, so I see all these tweets and they make me want to buy all the things. But
yeah, so these are looking pretty cool. This is the first time we've seen a Zelda prototype that isn't just, you know, gray plastic, and she's looking pretty nice, you know, all in color. And then we found out that there are actually two versions of Link. There is a regular version, and then there is a DX version that includes lots of extra accessories. Specifically, the Orden Sword, the Hero's Bow with arrows, the Claw Shot, the Hawkeye Mask, not to be confused with the Marvel superhero Hawkeye, this is a different Hawkeye, and the Ball and Chain. And then both the DX and the regular version include the Master Sword and the Hylian Shield. And it's just $9 more for all the extra stuff. So
yeah, what I really love about the Figma line is how mostly affordable they are. If you love the character, it's just a no-brainer. Buy the Figma, and maybe buy two, one to pose on your desk and the other one to keep in the box.
Don't keep them in the box, man.
They look pretty good in the box.
Yeah, they're all right, but I mean, they don't want to be trapped in these cardboard and plastic prisons forever. They want to be out there.
Well, I leave them in the box
stretching and flexing and posing.
I don't know, I think dust ruins them sometimes, but
well, that might be true.
Well,
but
and also the Figma,
I wouldn't say buy two, buy one, make your choice.
Definitely. Let it out of the box. You're right. It is a little sad to leave it in the box. But
and in this case, the DX version, all the extra stuff, you know, obviously that is meant to be, you know, posed and displayed.
For sure.
You know, so you can, you know, have them doing all sorts of dynamic stuff with the various weapons. And I'm happy to have that option.
Yeah, that's a great deal.
Yeah, I pre-ordered mine at BigBadToyStore.com. And they are supposed to be coming out in North America in July of next year, 2017.
All right. Yeah, I recommend Big Bad Toy Store as well. I think it's a great way to buy things, and they have a way you can
pre-order it really easily,
and you don't have to pay for it right away. You know, the money doesn't come out of your bank account until the thing ships, which is really nice. They also have this cool little
it's called Pile of Loot.
That's right. So you can, you can combine a bunch of things and then ship them to yourself all at once and save on shipping.
Right. So that really saves on shipping.
Well, it's called Pile of Loot. Is that right? Yeah.
Yep. Trust me. I know. just one other collectible of note I wanted to mention. Did you hear the news about Story of Seasons Trio of Towns?
I did, because because I follow you on Twitter. This is big news in your world. I was like, my God.
Yes, it is.
Somebody over there must be a fan of yours or must know you personally, because I can't imagine a world in which this actual product exists. But go ahead, tell us what it is.
Well, one of the things I've been most excited about in this game is the fact that there is a new animal that is added to the series. Mm-hmm. You can have a pet capybara. Yes, a pet capybara, the world's largest rodent. And now Exceed has unveiled there is a pre-order bonus of a miniature plush capybara.
It looks awesome. It looks awesome. I think that would probably push me over the edge to buy one of these things.
Yeah, it's only like, you know, three and a half inches or something like that. But who cares?
Yeah.
It is a plush capybara. So get your pre-orders in today and have your own miniature giant rodent.
I recommend it. Looks so cute. It looks cute. Very cuddly.
Yes. Yes, indeed. You can't go wrong with a capybara. All right. That takes care of our news and impressions segment of the show. Let's have a little intermission, and when we come back, we'll discuss our big topic, which is the 20th anniversary of the Nintendo 64. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the 20th anniversary of the Nintendo 64 in North America. Now, I have to say, I rather regret that we are doing this late. We were supposed to do this last week, and then the week before was our 64th episode, so I was like, oh man, should we do the N64 stuff early, or, you know, should we do it a week later so we're right on time for the anniversary? But, you know, then stuff happened and we got last week's delayed. And so, you know, here we are a week late, episode 65, doing our 20th anniversary of the Nintendo 64 coverage. I apologize for not putting it in episode 64. That would have been much better, in my opinion. Oh, well, you can't have everything. You know, we're going to get into the top 10 games of the system, our unified list of the top 10 games. Before we get to that part, though, Scott, what were your initial impressions of this system? Did you get the system at launch? Were you there lining up on launch day? What did you think back in this post-Super NES era? What was it like for you?
I was there. I did get this system at launch.
Okay.
I played the heck out of Mario 64. And I had Yoshi's Story. It was just mind-blowing to play a game that I don't even think PCs at the time were doing anything quite as good. They, you know, we were getting there, but for the most part, PC games were still trapped in 2D, and to play 3D games was pretty revolutionary at home.
But it was coming on the heels of the PlayStation. So
that's right.
Were you a PlayStation guy at the time, or had you ignored the PlayStation?
I didn't own a PlayStation. I had friends with the PlayStation, but I was kind of not. I don't know. I just wasn't for me. But
so you were just more of a Nintendo loyalist.
That's
is that
right.
Why?
That's sad but true.
Well, I don't know.
So I skipped
for this podcast.
Yeah.
I think it makes perfect sense.
I totally skipped the PlayStation. I never owned a PlayStation 1.
Huh. Well.
Yep.
So that's kind of the opposite of me, because I actually got both a Sega Saturn. Yes, I'm the one who bought a Sega Saturn in the U.S.
Which, by the way, was an awesome system.
And I got a PlayStation. But I had a hard time with Nintendo making the jump from the Super NES to the Nintendo 64. Because one of the things I loved about the Super NES was all the third-party support and all the variety they had. And that was one of the big things that went away with the Nintendo 64. We weren't seeing stuff from Square and Capcom and Konami anymore. And, you know, Nintendo made the decision to stick with cartridges, of course. You know, I was not necessarily completely sold with where they were going when they made that change. Nonetheless, I was there on day one. mostly due to a friend of mine who was way more excited about the Nintendo 64 than I was. And it actually came out on his birthday. However, he already had a job at that time, and so he was busy working that day. Meanwhile, I was able to go out, get into a short line, and go to the store and pick up a Nintendo 64 along with Super Mario 64, bring it back, and we sat down and we played a bunch of Mario and had a blast doing it. But personally, it was years before I got my own system. My brother got one. My brother was really into it. He really loved the multiplayer aspect of it. And so I would play some stuff on his system. When Ocarina of Time came out, that was how I played it. It was on my brother's system. And you know, he was very generous with letting me use it for whatever I needed to. Mm. And you know, just I remember playing that right when it came out around the holidays, all the way back in 1998. And you know, I just have so many, you know, fond memories of sitting there playing through the Zelda dungeons while my family was you know, preparing Thanksgiving dinner and stuff like that. Lots of fun memories involving that system, but it wasn't until the Play It Loud stuff came out that I actually got my own, because by then I was no longer living at home. I couldn't borrow my brother's. I couldn't you know, go over and play it at my friend's house. So I got my own. I think I got a transparent blue system, and that was you know, what I used to play some of the last stuff that came out, like Majora's Mask and things of that mm-hmm. nature. So there you have it. That is my history with the Nintendo 64 system.
Yeah, my story with the N64 ends with me selling it maybe a year after I got the thing, which is so pathetic, maybe 2 years after I got it. I get motion sick playing games with perceived motion. So yeah, a lot of those games made me actually physically ill.
Oh no, this is tragic.
Yeah, so a lot of these games that we're going to actually talk about make me sick. They make me actually motion sick. So let's take it away with that one, yeah.
All right, so starting off, number 10, GoldenEye 007.
Yeah, did you play this game a lot? I played it with my roommates quite a bit. And then this is where screen peeking came from. The whole like no screen peeking, because you're playing a multiplayer game on a television, and you can each see your, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's basically, you know, hide yeah. around the corner and snipe your friends, and
yep.
if you can totally see where in the level they are by looking at somebody else's quadrant of the level. This was a
you
really
could.
Great
you
four
could,
player
I suppose.
Game. So I did play this with three of my roommates, and we had a blast. But of course, again, I got motion sick playing it.
Yeah, this was sort of the game that, you know, delivered the FPS promise to consoles. This, you know, was the game that kind of taught, you know, people how it was done. Before that, it was like, oh, you play it on PC or you don't do it at all. But then Nintendo and Rare and GoldenEye came in and they're like, hey, this is how you do it on a console. And like you said, it was awesome for multiplayer. And I think it kind of appealed to sort of a new audience. This was not necessarily the Nintendo faithful who were playing this. This was probably the game actually that made my brother want to get a Nintendo 64. It was specifically for this game. And, you know, I play it somewhat because it is a very good game. But man, my brother and his friends, they would sit around playing this for hours and hours and hours, just like you were saying you did with your friends.
It was infinitely fun. I mean, it was just, it was an experience you couldn't have any way else unless you had four people in a room with four computers and four screens. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it was pretty unique at the time.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, the four-player built-in functionality. This is a place where this, you know, really was able to shine. That was one of the brilliant things about the Nintendo 64, was having this built-in four-player, you know, basically making it, you know, like the de facto party system. And that was, you know, really never more apparent than it was with GoldenEye 64. Mm-hmm. And I would say it was probably the, you know, quote-unquote coolest game on the system for sure.
I agree. Obviously, you're aware, if out there, if you play video games, you're aware of the impact that GoldenEye had on gaming, mm-hmm. but it's still relevant. There's a mod for Half-Life called GoldenEye Source, and they've recreated all the levels from GoldenEye because they're so iconic with the Half-Life engine. So if you want to play GoldenEye you know, on your computer, it's pretty much the next best thing to hooking up an N64. So it's called GoldenEye Source. Check it out.
Well, I'm never going to play it that way, but that is cool to know. Okay, number 9, Kirby 64, The Crystal Shards.
Did you own this game?
No, I didn't. I did play it back in the day somewhat, but I didn't actually own it until the Kirby Collection came out on the Wii. But I know you were a big fan, so what were the things that you liked about it the most?
Well, it's like a 2.5D side-scrolling 3D game, almost like Yoshi's Story, I guess. It's a fun little platformer. It's definitely easy.
Yeah, as the Kirby games tend to be.
You know, it's a lot of the eating the enemies and getting their power. I think, is it this one that had the, you could combine the two powers, so if you ate a thing and ate another thing, it would create a secondary power? Yeah, it was basically like if you got the needle thing and the spark thing, they would combine and it would make a more powerful like spark needle weapon. So, and that happened with like, I think the 8 or 10 different power-ups. So there was a lot of different combinations of, you know, what if I added this power-up and this power-up, what does it get me? Usually a much more powerful weapon. You know, it's almost your basic Kirby game. You know, it's a great game. It's fun.
It was a fun game.
And I do own it currently. I own it again. I bought a bunch of N64 games and a lot, and this one is in the pile. I just haven't gotten through to it yet. I've been playing.
Well, it's also on Virtual Console, so you can play it that way as well.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I should get out my little stack of N64 games, but yeah, I just have a small stack of N64 games.
Well, that was definitely a good one. Mm-hmm. Number 8, Banjo-Kazooie. This is one that I would mostly play at my friend's house, and we would sort of, you know, tag in and out. I think my friends played it more than I did, but, you know, obviously the takeaway is that this was one of the best 3D platformers of its time.
It is. It's better than Mario 64, which is, you know, saying a lot. Really? I think so.
You think so?
I think so. Hmm. Do you think so?
Well, I don't think I can quite agree with that overall, but in some ways, I think you're probably right. Why do you say that?
I just like the puzzle solving aspect of it. You know, you have to really think about how you're going to make your way through the level, and you can. It's not as linear as, and I hate to say that Mario 64 is linear, but sometimes it feels a little linear.
No, Mario 64 was so open.
Yeah,
but had quirky characters.
It had
a bear.
It did.
Had a bird and had an evil warty
you can
witch.
Swim and fly, and there were was it puzzle pieces you collected? There were
musical notes.
Oh
yes, that's what you're collecting. Lots of stuff to collect. Yeah. This was rare in its heyday, doing its thing.
It was definitely a collect fest thing. Yeah, this game had a huge impact, and it came a few years after Mario 64. I didn't own this game. I've only played it at a friend's house.
Huh, so you're actually in the same boat as me then. That must say something about the high quality of the game if neither of us owned it, but both of us remember it so fondly that we think it's one of the top 10 games on the entire system.
I can't really say a ton about it. I never finished it, but it is...
The ending was really hard, man.
It was really hard?
The end section was pretty darn hard, yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot of love for it because people are going crazy for Yooka-Laylee. And did you ever play Banjo-Tooie?
I didn't really play it that much. And, you know, that's kind of the sad thing about Banjo-Kazooie is I haven't played that one in forever either because, you know, it's not on Virtual Console. Microsoft owns the rights.
It's on that. It's on Xbox.
It's on Xbox One, that, you know, rare 30 for 30 years thing. Yep. But I don't have an Xbox One, so I haven't played it in forever. I don't currently own the N64 cartridge either, but I do remember it being so much fun back in the day. You know, they did a really great platforming job. They sort of built on the foundation that Super Mario 64 created, but they didn't go, you know, so kooky, crazy, goofy as they did with Donkey Kong 64. So they like found a really, really good middle ground. And this was, you know, sort of one of the games that you would say is rare at its best. So I think it is well earned in its place on our top 10 list. All right, number 7 on our list, Mario Kart 64. And I will go on record and say that I think that this blew away the original Super Mario Kart in pretty much every way.
Wow, that is saying something.
I think that racing games are one of the genres that are just sort of improved unconditionally, exponentially, by the move over to polygons and the move over to 3D. Mm-hmm. I think sports might be the other one, but you know, when it comes to racing, just you know, being able to take these tracks that were done in Mode 7, everything was totally flat, and suddenly you've got like you know these fully realized tracks with actual three-dimensional designs and real depth to them, and you can actually make interesting or at least more interesting courses.
Yeah.
I think that you know really, really improved on the Mario Kart concept and made it so much more fun than it was originally.
I think the
was really what made me a fan of the series.
I think the course designs are outstanding.
Yeah.
I think they always had been, even in the 2D era of Mario Kart.
They did what they could, you know.
But yeah, they're just so much fun, and the secret little shortcuts and that's the kind of stuff that really, really makes the game fun to see somebody take a way through a course that you didn't know existed. That kind of stuff. And the course design is just spot on, you know. They really they look great, and every course feels unique, and you know it the second you see it, and you say, oh, that's, you know, Donut Plains 3 or whatever.
Plus, this is another one that really benefited from the built-in four-player multiplayer, so you could do four players all at once going at it in Mario Kart.
And, of course, this is the first Mario Kart that made me motion sick. Yay.
Well, that's unfortunate. This also reminds me of another awesome racing game that did not quite make our top 10, which is Beetle Adventure Racing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Wave Race 64. I was going to have to come over there. What was the game called?
Beetle Adventure Racing.
Oh.
Are you familiar with
it?
No. Yeah, it is a little bit obscure because it's sort of a bizarre concept. It's not Beetles as in Bugs, it's Beetles as in the Cars. I believe it was published by EA. And, you know, even if you might not have heard of it, it's a really, really fun kart-style racer. If you're a fan of Mario Kart and the like, try to hunt it down. Try to, you know, pick it up off eBay used or something like that. It's a really fun alternative kart racer. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Really cool. Awesome course design and lots of cool shortcuts, just like Mario Kart 64. So
is Mario Kart 64 on Virtual Console in any way?
Yeah, actually, it came out on Virtual Console on Wii, and it's out on Wii U in Japan and Europe. It came out early this year, and I'm kind of surprised it's not out on the U.S. Virtual Console
yet. Yeah, I wonder why it's being held back.
Yeah, usually it comes to the U.S. shortly after it does other territories. So we'll probably be getting it soon enough. But yeah, for now we got to switch over to Wii mode. Plus, lots of those courses show up in later Mario Kart games, so you can sort of, you know, get some reminiscing done that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on to number 6, Conker's Bad Fur Day. Did you play Conker's Bad Fur Day?
No, I did not.
You haven't. So this is on our list only due to me.
Yeah,
huh?
This is the crazy wisecracking squirrel game.
It's insane. Yeah, and
the fact that it actually like got a Nintendo seal of quality.
Yes, how did this game get made? How did Nintendo publish it?
Explain it for the listeners out there who might not know a lot about Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Well, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of how this thing got made. I'm sure there are stories of it online, but originally it was supposed to just be a cute, cuddly platformer, kind of like Mario 64, kind of like Banjo-Kazooie. At one point, it was just going to be Conker 64. At one point, it was going to be called 12 Tails. But it was just going to be this cute little platformer with a squirrel as the main character.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, somehow, when the game finally came out, it's still got a cute squirrel main character, but it's this M-rated platforming adventure full of foul language and crude humor and blurred out naughty bits and a giant singing turd.
Yeah.
It's got all these, you know, goofy parodies. It's got lots of alcohol, lots of alcohol use, lots of bad jokes, lots of good jokes, too. Lots of variety. Sometimes it's a platformer. Sometimes it's a racing game. Sometimes it's a shooter. And you might be thinking, well, this is all very strange and weird. And you're right. It's completely strange. It's completely weird. But somehow it really worked. It was a really fun game. And it was also, you know, it was pretty spot on with the humor, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, nothing that you would ever expect Nintendo to have published. Like I said, I still don't know how Rare convinced them to actually do it. but it ended up being really, really great. I'm sure it sold completely poorly. It was not covered in Nintendo Power at all back in the day because of the type of game it was. And the Nintendo Player's Guide was sold like in a black plastic bag, so you couldn't even see what it was.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
So in a sense, Nintendo was like kind of wiping their hands of this thing.
Yeah. And
but it's still awesome game.
So is this is this in that rare pack for Xbox?
I believe it is. I don't know if it's actually this version or if it's the remake version that was in the 30 for 30. But yes, I do believe that some version of Conker is in there because an enhanced remake did come out on the first Xbox system.
So
that's great.
Yeah, and as an addendum, because it was one so mature and had such racy humor.
If by mature you mean immature, yes.
Yeah, and didn't sell very well. There are very few copies of this game out there. This is one of the most expensive N64 games out there. So
I did not realize that.
If you can find Conker somewhere at a flea market or a garage sale, pick it up because it's worth quite a bit of money.
Well, let me tell you, one of my other friends, he just absolutely loved this game. He was a pretty big Rare fan back in the day. He loved Donkey Kong Country and all that stuff, but he really loved Conker's Bad Fur Day. So he bought like every different variation he could find. He bought all the international versions. He bought all the different strategy guides, any sort of collectibles they made. So that collection must be worth a pretty penny now if what you're saying about that is true.
Yeah, and N64 games aren't, I mean, obviously games are, retro games are expensive, but I think N64 games are still not quite as expensive as they could be. So if you're in the market, maybe get it now because it's not going to get any cheaper.
This is true. This is true. Okay, moving on to number five. We have WWF No Mercy. This is a wrestling game. This is back when WWE was still known as the WWF. But there were actually lots of good wrestling games on the Nintendo 64. So this could have been WrestleMania 2000, or this could have been WCW NWO Revenge, or WCW versus NWO World Tour. They were all great games. They were all made by the same developer and publisher. Aki Asmic Ace was the development crew, and they were all published by THQ, and they were all just really fun in a way that kind of surpassed the wrestling genre. I mean, wrestling was huge back then. This was right at the height of, you know, wrestling's enormous comeback in the mid to late 90s. So that really helped, but also just the simple pick-up and play game mechanics. It had a striking mechanic and a grapple mechanic, and sort of the strikes countered the grapples, and then there were stronger versions you could do by holding down the buttons. And it was just really intuitive, and it worked really, really well. So this was another game that was fantastic for multiplayer just because it was so easy to get into and play. Plus, it was super customizable, and that was another thing that made this one so fun. So if you were a fan of watching WWF on TV, and you know how the characters, you know, might change costumes or change gimmicks, you could just go into the game and you could give them a totally different outfit. You could even change the face of the character if you wanted to. I'm not sure why you would do that. That's kind of weird when you think about it. But it would let you just do whatever you wanted with the characters. For years, it seems like wrestling companies have tried to emulate the success of these wrestling games, and they would be like, oh yeah, this one will be, you know, just like No Mercy, just like WrestleMania, and none of them could do it. I don't know why. So, you know, to this day, that might be the greatest wrestling game of all time.
Wow, that is huge.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I never played this, but made me slightly interested in a wrestling game.
Okay, on to number four. You knew this one was coming. Super Mario 64.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the game that sort of defined the modern era of video games. Definitely the modern era of platforming video games.
Yep.
But to me, I kind of feel like there's pre-Mario 64 and there's post-Mario 64. Like, everything changed after that. This was sort of the game that showed up and it's like, this is how you make things work in 3D. And they sort of said, here, we'll open up the world, we'll add more exploration, we'll add some camera controls so you're not just locked into a single viewpoint. You know, you aren't just running down the straight path and bashing blocks in the Mushroom Kingdom. Things are a lot more open and you have a lot more freedom. And obviously it was a, you know, a huge success as far as anything was a success on the Nintendo 64.
It was huge.
Yes.
And I would say it was the first game that, for me, used analog controls in such an important way.
Yeah, yeah, that's especially,
you know,
key.
The, you know, sneaking and running was just a matter
of, you make a great point,
pushing the stick further, which was revolutionary at the time. So
yep.
Yeah, and it was pretty boundless. I mean, I was saying it's linear, but yeah, you can run anywhere. I just love the game. It's such a great game.
Yeah, it was very, very revolutionary.
It informed a lot of where Mario's gone in the last 10 years.
Yeah, totally.
Mario Galaxy owes what it is to Mario 64. The 3D, all the 3D Marios has really just, I don't think Mario would still be a 2D game if it weren't for Mario 64. So,
did you have any favorite levels or favorite parts of the game?
For some reason, that dump sliding down the penguin race.
That was not one of my favorite parts, but it's very, very memorable.
Yeah.
I think because I fell into the abyss so many times.
Anytime I was shot out of that cannon was memorable. You know, being able to figure out where those cannons were and accessing them was a challenge in and of themselves. And once you climbed into the cannon and flew, that was pretty awesome. Flying through a 3D level was just a really neat
that's true
mechanic. But all the boss battles were a lot of fun.
Yeah, lots of fun memories of grabbing Bowser by his tail and spin him around.
Yep. That giant chain chomp in the first level, like, that's just brilliant, you know. I can draw out that level today, just draw out where all the things are in that level, because I explored it so much, trying to, you know, climb all the walls and go all places that you weren't actually supposed to get to by, you know, jumping off trees and stuff.
Yep, that was a lot of fun to try all kinds of different stuff.
Great game.
Yep. All right then, moving on to number three, another Mario game, Paper Mario.
Paper Mario,
this was sort of the follow-up to Super Mario RPG. It was originally known as Super Mario Adventure, but then it came out, it was something totally different, and it was not really what anyone expected, but it was still really amazing. What did you like about it?
I enjoyed it because I thought I'm a sucker for graphics. I didn't think a game could look that good back then, and man, it just looks so great. And I love the character design. You know, Paper Mario.
It was
Mario
a very distinctive look for Mario games.
Cute look, yep. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's an RPG with the puzzle solving elements, I'm a sucker for that. I don't think it's the best Paper Mario game, but I don't think, you know.
It's true. Everyone knows Thousand Year Doors is better, but still, it was.
But it is a really wonderful game. Yep, it's pretty great.
Yeah, it was lots of fun with those timing-based attacks and teaming up with various enemies.
Yeah, and I think that's where Mario and Luigi, the partners in time games, get their mechanics too. I know a lot of it started with the Super Mario RPG, but the whole timing your attacks and the power moves and stuff all came from Paper Mario.
Yeah, it kind of started with Mario RPG, but I would say, it probably got refined. It got made even better in Paper Mario. Yeah, it's not like the N64 was exactly known for its RPGs. You know, it didn't have any Squaresoft or Enix support. And, you know, everyone knows that Quest 64 is one of the garbage games of all time. But it does have Paper Mario, which is an amazing RPG. So, you know, if you are talking about, you know, great RPGs, you can't forget that one. So it really filled a huge hole in the N64's library. It was one of the later games released, but it was certainly very much appreciated that it finally came out and was able to deliver a unique RPG experience like that.
And I guess this is on Virtual Console?
It is definitely on some forms of Virtual Console.
Oh, it is. It's on Wii U and Wii.
Cool. Okay, so if you've been paying attention to this list, there have been a couple notable omissions from, what I would consider one of my favorite series. So, no surprise, here we are with number two, and it is The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
Tell us about it, Chris. I played it.
It is one of the weirdest Zelda games ever.
It is. It's one of those, I mean, it's almost like a love it or hate it game with a lot of Zelda fans.
I guess. I mean, it's funny when it comes to The Legend of Zelda. You know, this is number two on my N64 list. You know, my number two N64 game. If I were putting all my Zelda games in order, this would actually be, you know, towards the bottom end. But that just shows, you know, how great the entire Zelda series is as a whole. You know, I enjoy almost, you know, everything in the Zelda series. So to say that it's one of my least favorite Zelda games, but still one of my favorite N64 games, I think, just says a lot about the Zelda series. And like I was saying, it is strange. You are basically wearing the faces of the dead. Yeah. There's a giant moon trying to crush you with this really weird, freaky face going on.
Yeah.
You know, when at the very beginning, you're not the very beginning, but, you know, you're going through chasing after the Skull Kid who stole your horse and who knows what else. And then you get transformed. And, you know, Link, like, kind of freaks out. And he's, like, you know, screaming in pain. And he's, like, terrified to get transformed. Yeah, when you switch the
masks even, there's a horrible noise.
Yeah.
It is bizarre. It's very dark.
It's dark. It is by far the darkest Zelda game. And it's weird and twisted.
Yeah, and if it's your first Zelda game, man, I am so sorry. Man, it is not friendly to noobs. I'll tell you that.
No, it's not.
The mechanic with the 3 days and the fact that if you don't get what you need to get done in those 3 days, you lose almost everything and it goes back to zero. So it's a lot of like doing and redoing puzzles. And if you didn't finish the boss fight before that third day winds down, you have to redo the whole dungeon.
Yeah. So on the one hand, it's got all this punishing. Cool stuff. Like all of these, you know, really intricate, cool side quests, and you are able to transform into a Deku scrub and into a Zora and into a Goron, and all that stuff is really awesome. And then, on the other hand, there is this 3-day cycle that's always looming over your head. And like you're saying, you're often forced to replay stuff that you've already successfully done before. And that can be a little bit frustrating. I suppose that's the reason why it's you know, one of my lower Zelda games, but still it's so unique and, you know, so different from the other Zelda games in a lot of ways that, you know, it's just a really, you know, terrific experience as long as you don't mind, you know, that one caveat and you're okay with the fact that, oh, you know, I might not be able to finish all this. I do think they helped alleviate some of that with the 3DS version because you know, then it has, you can do save points. So
you huge, because otherwise you didn't have to scramble to find a save point in in the game.
But if you do something that requires, you know, a lot of you might have to try and try and try again, and you might waste a lot of time doing that on the N64. On this one, you could be like, okay, well, I wasted too much time. I'll just go back to my save point and try doing it over. But regardless of that, I thought, you know, Majora's Mask was a really cool must-play experience and certainly one of the best games on the system.
I agree. But it's better on the 3DS, so get it there.
Yes.
It is a great game. And the music, the level design, everything.
Yeah, it's got really, some really great dungeons. I really like that one towards the end that you flip upside down and stuff. Again, trying to figure that stuff out while you've got this you know, moon looming over your head, literally going to crush you, is kind of frustrating.
Yeah. It doesn't reward exploration is the issue. It doesn't reward you for exploring. It punishes you for exploring.
in that sense, yes.
And for forgetting where a thing was because, you know, you're running in the wrong direction and all of a sudden, oh, you know, the clock just struck out and times were wound on you. So play the Song of Time before you start the level, kids.
Yeah, the one that slows down time. that's right. That's the thing you gotta remember.
Play the song of, what is it called?
Halftime?
Or double time? I think they just called the Song of Time. That slows down time. And the Song of Double Time speeds up time. And with time, certain things happen in the town on certain days at certain times. So you're rewarded for like just hanging out in town all day, waiting for people to show up, which I never have gotten to. I have never, ever understood why you would hang out in a town until 6 p.m. on the second day to go to a certain shop to get a certain thing. Forget about it. Anyway, that's where I'm at with the... But it's a great game. But
and that is why you might want to use a strategy guide.
That's right. You need a strategy guide for that game. I have the strategy guide. It's It's vital for the three, for if you're going to replay it on the 3DS, you need it. Trust me.
Anyway, this takes us to our number one game on the Nintendo 64. To the surprise of nobody, it is The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Mm-hmm. You know, what can we say about Ocarina of Time? It's like, you know, the highest rated game ever, pretty much.
Yeah, it feels like Nintendo's trying to recapture that gold every time with a new 3D Zelda game.
It took the 2D Hyrule that we knew and turned into a, you know, living, breathing, three-dimensional place. It's got some of the best characters and best storytelling in the Zelda series. And plus, it was, you know, super innovative and remarkable when it came to defining what 3D games were all about. It kind of took most of what Mario 64 had started and, you know, kind of finished it off and said, well, this is how you do these other things in an action adventure game, by adding, you know, the lock on targeting and things of that nature. It must have been extraordinarily tough to take what had been a traditionally top-down 2D series and make it work in 3D, but they did it, and they did it very, very well.
Yeah, to think we went from A Link to the Past to that.
And Link's just, Awakening.
And Link's Awakening, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just pretty mind-blowing. Yeah, it looks like they're from two different universes. Not that I'm saying I still think Link to the Past is the best Zelda game.
Well, me too. Me too.
But Ocarina still, is also the great. Fact that it's just pretty, it's just, it was a gorgeous game. So, yeah, and you can get it now on the 3DS again because they reprinted it. It's one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Is it one of those $20 titles?
I believe it is.
Yeah, holy cow. Well worth it. You should buy 20 of them and give them out on Halloween.
Yeah, you can get it that way. You can get it on Virtual Console. There's lots of ways to re-experience Ocarina of Time, which you should do because it is one of the all-time greats.
It is a great game.
You know, so many memorable moments. You know, the stuff with Saria is some of my favorite stuff in a Zelda game. Going through the forest temple and the twisty stuff. It's also got, you know, it has a couple of its own creepy moments. Not as many as Majora's Mask, but like going into the, you know, the Shadow Temple, that's pretty gnarly.
And the music.
Ah, great music.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you can't have a game where the ocarina is the main tool and not have great music, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's funny that you say that.
But yeah, Gerudo Valley is one of my all-time favorite Zelda tunes. Yep, it is a true classic in every sense of the word. So that's it. That's our top 10 Nintendo 64 games. I do want to give a quick shout out to just, you know, a couple honorable mentions that didn't quite make the top 10 because, you know, there were other awesome games on the series I hate to leave out. Well, Yoshi's Story, why don't you start talking about why you like Yoshi's Story so much?
I'm embarrassed because I didn't know. I just assumed it was just a Mario game, a 2D side-scrolling Mario game. I loved Yoshi's Island, so I just assumed it was that when I bought this. And then I got it home and I had to play it with the sound all the way down. I didn't want my parents to know I was playing what sounded like a baby game. Like, after you finish each level, there's this ridiculous song. It's just ridiculous. If you've played it, you know. But it's like no other 2D platformer, not that I am aware of. You have to collect a certain number of fruits throughout the level, and when you get like 30 of them, the level ends. It is fun, it's rewarding, it's challenging, it's goofy as heck. It's for, mostly feels like it's for babies, but it's
yeah, it's sort of a kid's game, but still, it's got some neat aspects to it.
It's fun, it's a fun 2D platformer on a system that it was lacking in 2D platformers. So
this is true. The other ones I want to give a shout out to are Star Fox 64. You know, I think it's, you know, pretty much universally accepted that is the best game in the Star Fox series. Plus, it's the one that introduced Rumble to the world. F-Zero X is my favorite game in the F-Zero series. It's, you know, super fast. 30 cars on the courses. The courses are just crazy, insane. They went absolutely nuts with the 3D track design and what you can do in, the third dimension and, you know, sort of, you know, defying gravity at this time. And the soundtrack totally rocks. They just went, you know, totally nuts. Sounds like, you know, some
heavy
crazy
metal ridiculous.
Yeah. Things. Yeah. 80s hair metal band going nuts with the F-Zero tunes. Oh, and Mischief Makers. That was another really cool one. You know, you mentioned with Yoshi's Story.
That's another platformer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There weren't very many platformers like that, but here we had a Mischief Maker from Treasure. And it was a really cool technique filled, basically, you know, 2D platformer game. And unfortunately, I hardly remember anything about it at this point in time, but I do remember it being a standout and, you know, just being, you know, very unique for the N64 library. And then the last one I wanted to give an honorable mention to, Dr. Mario 64. You know, I've always kind of liked the Dr. Mario series, even if it's maybe, you know, not as good as, you know, say Tetris or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. Mario 64 had this four-player mode, and I found that that could be, you know, tons of fun if you want to play a puzzle game with, you know, a bunch of friends.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Dr. Mario 64, you know, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you have it. We got our honorable mentions. We got our top 10 list, GoldenEye, Kirby, Banjo-Kazooie, Mario Kart, Conker's Bad Fur Day, WWF No Mercy, Super Mario 64, Paper Mario, Majora's Mask, and Ocarina of Time. The Power Pros Top 10 Nintendo 64 Games. Dig out your console and celebrate 20 years. And I think that just about does it for this week's show. We've gone on an awful long time, so I think we'd better wrap it up here. But before we go, I think there's still time for a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the Super NES fighting game, Shaq Fu. Come and get yours. Shaq brings his awesome skill and size to a multi-world fighting game. As Shaq, use your lightning-fast shuriken and other martial arts techniques to prevail over six intensely evil warriors in the enforcement of justice. Or choose any of the seven warriors and fight head-to-head. Summon Voodoo's bone-shattering earthquake, rebound with Raja's shockwave sword, or lash out with Set's terrifying mummy wrap. Scores of secret power moves to discover and master. Awesome animation from the designers of Flashback. Destroy your opponent with special power moves. Choose Shaq or one of the six other interdimensional martial artists. Tournament, duel, and story modes. Battle against the computer or go head-to-head with another player. That's right. The legendary, the one and only, Shaq Fu. I like the fact that it mentions that Shaq's like main technique is his lightning fast shuriken, because that's what that guy is known
because
for.
Because of course he's a martial artist. Yeah, of course he's a martial artist.
Of course.
So I mean, this game is such a following that they were able to successfully kickstart a new Shaq Fu game, which just either people are just hyper nostalgic like me and, you know, want
to
see.
There was a Kickstarter. Yeah, I don't know whatever happened to that. Is that still happening? Is it actually coming out?
Yeah, it got funded. I mean, they have a Wii U logo on their website, so that's positive.
Oh, my. Well, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter, at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Scott at Plastic Bugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella,
go dust off your N64,
and my dear departed Nintendog Sophie, we will see you next time. Da 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 da.
Oh yeah.
Da 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 da. That's a special bonus for y'all.